Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Ripple Intent Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Kyle McCroskey, and with me, as always, is the other co-host, John. John, go ahead and say hello.
Hey, listeners. Glad to have you with us again.
So what we do at Ripple Intent is we work hard to give you experiences and opportunities to become a better person, better teammate, and a better leader. We do that through our breakfast clubs, which take place all around the country, and our annual symposium, which takes place in Denver. And through our podcast, where we get to talk to some really interesting and amazing people. And today we are talking to one of those very interesting and amazing people, Jack Mumma. He joins us. Well, I'll let him explain what he's doing these days. But I've known Jack for, oh, geez, probably, what, 15 years now, 12, 15, somewhere around that. We crossed paths in COA, Construction Owners Association of America. We were on a couple of committees together, really got to know him there. He is a lawyer by training, spent 27 years in Michigan, recently relocated, and has been on the procurement side of the business for a long, long time. His entire career. And what has always fascinated me about Jack is that Jack is one of the most in-tuned people I know when it comes to other people. And so that's why he's with us today. So Jack, welcome. Thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure, Kyle. Thanks. Good to see you, John.
So yeah, let's start there real quick. What are you doing these days? Because after 27 years in Michigan, you just upped and headed across the country.
Yes. So for my Sparty friends, I'll just friendly amendment. That's Michigan State University.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, that's not a problem at all. It's I assumed you were referring to the region, not to the institution.
The state of Michigan, yes, my left hand. That's what I was referring to.
See, yes, he was here. You're going all mitten on me. Yeah. So I've been at Michigan State University for 27 years, and it was time for a change. I was very grateful for my wife, who basically said, "It's time to move." I was able to. As a matter of fact, Kyle, I can remember specifically talking to you about options, I'm going to say at least 5 years ago, because it was pre-pandemic, and I was going through a bunch of things, and you, in your very polite but straightforward Northwest Chicago side, said, okay, what are you going to do about it? You know, you could do a few things here, but you're going to have to do something. And it was just at that moment. I am now the Executive Director of Construction and Facility Strategic Acquisition at the University of Maryland, Baltimore. Quick clarification, UMB are the professional schools for College Park. If you think of the Terps, their med school, dental school, social work, a few other programs are here in Baltimore. We also manage projects for other University System of Maryland campuses here in the Baltimore area, several of them. And I'm in charge of the group that does the procurement, the contract administration for capital projects, construction and maintenance on campus, and some facilities things that go along with it. But it was time to come here. It was time to move on. This became a really interesting place to come because of people I knew here, including Kyle, our old mutual friend, Mike Ellicott, who was the recruiter on this. And we were on that same COA committee together, I believe. I think he was still on when you joined. And that's how I got here, and savoring the opportunity.
Well, awesome. Appreciate you being here today with us and having this conversation. It was, you know, while we were talking about what do we want to talk about today, And it really came out. So you've had a very, very good and I would say interesting. So I've known you from we haven't worked together, but we have through COA. Yeah. So what has always been very fascinating, I was trying to describe this to John before we got on the call, and then you got on the call and I tried to even further describe this and I was struggling with it. But really what it comes down to is you are one of the most fascinating people I've ever met, because you have this innate ability to see the world as people. So what I mean by that is in all the COA conferences that we ever attended together, you were very clear about making it about the attendees, making it about the people in the room. It didn't really matter what the presentation was. It was how are the people receiving it, and what are the people going to hear, and what are the people going to learn, and how are they going to experience it, and what do we do even in the transition times between sessions. And it was very much about the experience. It was almost the content was second to your focus on the people's experience at these events. And when I've heard you describe all these different things at work that you've done, and the way people, other people have described you, you're very people centric. And I hate to say it, but your list of career or your career path doesn't necessarily lend itself to, oh, look, it's someone who's been on the procurement side for 27 years. It's somebody who's a lawyer by training. It doesn't, those things do not scream people person. And so I'm really curious to know how you either, how did all of that work connect itself to who you are as somebody who absolutely focuses on people?
So I'm shocked that you've never been invited to the Warm and Cuddly Procurement Officers Association meetings.
Oh. I don't Hugs know. For everyone.
With a back charge. It's an interesting, I've had an interesting journey, and probably where it starts. And I was talking to Howie Ferguson from COA last week, and Howie didn't know this about, or had forgotten this about me, so I figure other people probably have too. The reason I have this degree in philosophy is because I was studying to be a Catholic priest in my undergrad. And so there was a lot of soft skills taught in that I didn't really know that's what I was learning. But frankly, as I'm listening to some of the culture war things going on right now, it's just I keep coming back to phrases like seeing the face of God in each other. And recognizing, and you don't have to be, whether you view it religiously or not, that's okay. But we have to see each other as humans and as basically good people who are also flawed. And both are true for all of us. It's really easy to think of whoever's in our tribe as basically good, and those people over there is basically flawed. But we all have that duality to start with. And I think that's a fundamental piece of what I've learned over the years and how I try to encounter people. The other thing is I am pretty good with a line. I'm a funny guy. I could keep up with jokes with the best of them. But being in a seminary, which is a closed loop system, very small, maybe 200 students at the most. So you get to know each other a lot, and it can turn into a little bit of the Lord of the Flies thing. If you're familiar with that, where you get to know each other so well, and you can turn on each other and you know where everybody's weak spots are. And you can grow some real calluses and say things that are far more hurting than you ever realized. And it took me a while to realize that what I need to do is to use that humor and use those lines for good, to not rip people apart and frankly, it's still a journey for me to say, is that line helpful? If, you know, it's funny. But am I moving this forward, or is this just something that makes it look funny, smart, and really didn't welcome somebody in? It's really, and frankly, in my new job, it's really given me a chance to think about that a lot more carefully, because they haven't heard all the nasty things I said over the last 27 years. If I can be careful and get to the right ones. So I think that's a big part of it, Kyle.
Yeah, I can relate to that last piece. I've run into a few folks that I worked with, like you said, in the past employment. So I'm going back now almost 8 years to the past employment, and I've run into some people there, and they're like, "Yeah, I remember when you said this," and I was like, "Oh my gosh, did I really? Wow, you're right. It was funny in the moment, but it was also hurtful."
Yeah, and that's the piece. I mean, it's one thing to be cringy, you know, because I said something stupid about myself or whatnot, but it's like, oh, why? That was not right, what I said about that person, or that's not helping me. That's not helping move the ball forward, you know, where we are. And just not what we owe each other. It'd be the other way. But, and I think it's kind of interesting in the design and construction world, it's such a complex set of relationships. I mean, the truth is, no one's in charge. You can say what you want, but nobody's really in charge, and we only can do this by moving forward. There's always somebody who can torpedo you, torpedo your project, torpedo your organization. And you think you can get things done, but you can't do it alone. And trying to do that together is just really important. I guess the other thing I'd say about me is there's a running joke in my family that I say, I claim I'm an introvert. And that's actually, I get that a lot. You know, my brother-in-law, I'll keep the E off this podcast. When I told him that, he said, yeah, I'm calling BS on that one. I think the truth is I'm an extrovert with some significant anxiety, and I worry, and that helps me in this way. It's a blessing because it helps me worry a little bit more about what other people are thinking. And because of that, I'm sensitive, or it just gets me listening a little bit better than just the cleverness of me is not enough to get by. I'm looking for that. I don't know, it's invalidation, but I'm trying to listen to folks. And that's been pretty helpful for me to also understand what do they really need. So I don't know. It's probably 5 minutes you get to cut.
No, that's usually when John's talking.
Seriously, I did talk for a whole 5 minutes already, and we've already trimmed that out.
I'm sorry. Was there a B in there or something?
Well, Jack, I find that fascinating because, you know, I don't feel like, well, so you're clearly in a leadership position, mm-hmm. right? And do you feel like, I mean, the way that your mind works, I love that you come into this space thinking about other people's context, right? And the fact that you don't come in thinking, all right, well, I'm in charge, I'm right, right? Because from a contractual standpoint, right, you represent an owner, mm-hmm. and those of us who don't, we're like, well, you're in charge. We're not in charge. So I love that you even come to this space to say not one of us is truly in charge. But so do you feel like how much of an impact do you feel like just the way you are has led to your progression, you know, promoted into positions of leadership? Or has some more of that been just, you know, a lot of times we get promotion just based on longevity in a position, right? Years of service kind of thing. But I feel like what I'm hearing is you're the leader that we want to have.
Well, it's interesting. First of all, when I was at Michigan State University, I held the same title for 27 years. The job probably completely reinvented itself three, maybe four times over that period. But I did that too. So I don't know that it'd be promoted. And I did negotiate raises over the time as things happened and all that too. I don't want to make it sound like I stayed in the same place. My influence, though, definitely, I think that's probably closer to where you are, John, is that my practice allowed me to be better. Those practices allowed me to be more influential. Just the notion that let's talk to them and find out what's going on. What are the needs based? It was funny because in addition to being a lawyer by training, I had 10 years of federal government service as a civilian. almost all in procurement in one form or another. And when I went to MSU, early on especially, I was given a lot of deference when I would be talking about things. And they're like, well, Jack's a lawyer. He knows what he's talking about on that. And the truth is, I wasn't discussing contract law. I was really quoting the federal procurement principles. And the federal procurement principles are pretty good. Their execution is really challenged. There's way too many people looking over their shoulder. It's decision averse. The first piece was just understanding that. But oh, I'm sorry. And where this really was going was when I was in law school, one of my professors, Catherine Dudenhaber, was an expert on alternative dispute resolution. I did research with her. And a big piece was she was a mediator in private practice, which in the quick lesson in terms, mediators help the parties come to their own decision. And she was big on all the getting to yes stuff. When that was new, about you listen to each other, you find the principles, you find the things you agree on, you find, the money comes last. That's the last thing you get to. First, you want to find where the agreement is and where you go. And then the dollars take care of themselves, because a lot of times it's just about the risk. And if we can manage that, we get where we get. So, it really is there, and maybe that is part of why, as I mentioned before, I have a friend who told me what I'm really good at is walking around talking to people and getting them to talk to each other, and just trying to get us to get there. I've got a lot of good ideas, but most of them I've stolen from somebody else. So it's really important to me to get everybody talking and listening, because so and so had the right idea. Let's look at that a little bit more, and that'll get us there. So, did that? I'm not sure I answered quite what you were asking, John. Or I may have just
riffed. I don't know either, but you went. I liked where you went.
Okay, good.
So you talked. I mean, one of the things, the phrase that I noted from our prep conversation was leading from the side. That's what you mentioned. That was mm-hmm. how you kind of framed your approach. So, yeah, I mean, what does that look like for you on a day-to-day basis? So how do you kind of get there in terms of like, yeah, so-and-so had a great idea. You should pay attention.
Yeah. So organizationally, just a little nerdery for you. At Michigan State University, I didn't have authority to sign anything. I couldn't sign a pay application. I couldn't sign a contract, a change order, or anything like that. It's kind of a typical contract administrator in higher ed would be in that role. Like, look, we're trying to get all this done, but we're not necessarily the one doing it. That would roll up to the vice president and to do that. But my job was to protect his signature. So he would listen to me. And if I had to play that card, I would. But mostly, I didn't have to much, because people knew I was, even if they didn't understand why I was saying it, they knew I was working in good faith about what was a good deal for the university and what, what do we need to do to keep our credibility going and whatnot. But I could never tell, I could never say have so-and-so removed from a project. I could say, or that you should put that, or we should do this, use this contracting method. Or you shall use it. I can say, I think that's really the way to go, or we need to be thinking about these things, or here are the issues. But also let people. So what I try to do in that situation is not take too much ownership in the decision itself, but make sure we get the right principles, we're thinking about it the right way, and then reasonable minds can differ and we can go there. It's been fascinating as I've come here to UMB, because this system is very much looks like the federal system, where procurement officers have signature authority. I always feel like I should drop my voice at a half act. We have signature authority. And I am the procurement officer. You know, and I'm sure you'll drop the trumpets in afterwards for the effect. But the and it was a few months ago we had a dispute. Frankly, it was a stupid dispute. It was like most of them. The numbers aren't important, but we were going, it was, the numbers were too high. Our numbers were too low. we get to a point where it's like people were starting to get entrenched. We should win here. We should win there. And I realized, wait a second, actually one of my staff, I was talking to Mike about it. And I said, okay, so what's our typical approach here? And he said, well, you're the procurement officer, trumpets blare. It's really, you know, if you think this is where we can be, you can just make that call and say, oh, darn it, I guess I got to make a decision. But again, even when I got there, I got other people, other UMB people in the room. And I said, I think this is where we are and it's time. Built the consensus first. And even though I don't think everybody was super, a couple of folks thought I was probably a little too generous, I got us to where we needed to be. And it wasn't just, we're taking this number and moving on. It's like, here are the issues and here are the risks that go with it.
Yeah. I've always seen you not just educate, but you do it in a way that respects the people's point of view.
So you
acknowledge, you know, if somebody's all fired up about one aspect of it, you'll give them a nod and go, I get why you're all fired up. And then you'll move on with the facts, the figures, or what you want to guide them to. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's one of the things that I've seen you do every time that we've had conversations where there's been disagreements or we get stuck on something.
Yeah.
Is you acknowledge where people are coming from before suggesting or trying to move the group forward. And it's almost like, it's like you go around the room and give everybody a hug and like, hey, what you said is important and I heard you. And you go to the next person and the next person, and the next person, and they just feel like they're a part of it. And you actually care. Now, if you move forward, whether or not you incorporate their points of views, doesn't really matter. It's like in the moment, he heard me. And okay, if we go a completely different direction, that's okay because he heard me.
Well, first of all, thank you. You really get me, Kyle. Virtual. No, that's I respect is really important in 10 words. I've come to appreciate lean a lot more when I move from waste to respect, you know, that whole shift about the 8 wastes of lean or whatever, respect for process, for people, for capital, that kind of thing. But yeah, I think we all want to be heard so much. And sometimes we want to be heard so much. We're so desperate for that. We don't hear each other. So if you don't know the active listening stuff, give yourself a minute to go look at it. It's really helpful about, you know, the basic rule I was taught. I wish I could tell you who said, if somebody said you're not listening to, you don't understand what I'm saying, they're right. If they don't feel understood, you probably aren't. And so you gotta get through that or you'll never get to the, okay, now what? Because how can I evaluate if I don't think you understand my point? How can I trust you're making a good, you're taking into consideration what we're doing?
Yeah,
just that simple.
And you put the active, but and we've seen John knows this too. You've seen this, the people who completely BS their way through the active listening stuff. Oh. There's a difference between authentically actively listening and following the steps.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Look, we did all this. So now we're empowered, right? Oh yeah.
I heard you. Yes. Yes.
I told you I heard you. Therefore it shall be true.
Now I will tell you why you're wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love the, you know, you said, and you know, they're just reading what they wrote and it's like, okay, tell me what, put that into your words. You know, put that, you know, tell me what I'm saying and not parrot it, don't parrot it back to me, but tell me what I really meant in the way you'd say it, Kyle, you know, that then I can understand, you know, and then you can do all the yes anding and all, which I also am a big fan of, but, you know, got to start with understanding each other and where that is.
So did you develop these skills over time? Was it like accidental? Was it seminars and listening to podcasts and watching YouTube videos? I mean, how did this come to be?
I wish I could tell you, there was some formula. I really do think there's something in my temperament that's built this way, that And I do think some of this mildly neurotic, worried just a little too much about what other people think is really a help for me. I think a lot of my education got me sensitive to each other, and that was important to it. But I also find myself gravitating to it. I mean, I did 4 years of law school at night, and I'm not talking to you about the rule against perpetuities. You know, I'm not, you know, or the alternative dispute resolution appealed to me because of where it is. You know, I've probably done fill in the blank dozens of seminars on and whatnot on, you know, how to be a more effective employee or whatnot, or even DEI. That'd be probably a good one. The best DEI seminar I ever went to, and we didn't call it DEI at the time. It was about, I think it was Crucial Conversations was the title of the book. And it was just basically, it was one of those airplane books, you know, that 150 page, you could sit down while you're waiting for your flight to get called and be done with it by the time the flight's over. But it had some real practical skills on how to have the difficult conversations, including acknowledging the tough pieces and whatnot. And it was funny because we went through it as a group with a bunch of procurement and accounting types. So, by the way, if you think the procurement people aren't warm and fuzzy, but I went through and they had us do some role playing, and I had a very specific thing in mind that I had gone through. And I ended it, and the facilitator said, "Oh, you're really good at this, you know, and not at the play acting, but at how to do it." And I said, "Well, I had something specific in mind where I had to talk to somebody, had a real hard conversation." I will say, it's funny, I'm a lawyer who hates conflict, but I think I've discovered I'm pretty good at it, and probably helps that I hate it, because I don't really. I don't want to go, let's go mix it up. You know, it's not fun for me. It's not something I want to do. And I'm presuming it isn't for you either. But I owe it to you. You know, sometimes we owe each other the truth. It's that simple.
Yeah. We got to have that conversation. Yeah. You describe yourself as a lifelong learner. And what I'm hearing you describe here is exactly that. You're constantly listening, paying attention, reflecting, analyzing. Yeah, the retrospectives, did it go well? Did I do right? And then that bit of anxiety when it comes to what other people think about you, it's like a perfect mix of not perfectionism, that's not right, but when we talk about constant improvement,
yeah,
it's like the perfect mix. You've got the right motivation, you've got the energy, you've got the analysis, and then you've got the heart that goes with it. And you put all that together and that's,
yeah.
So anything along the way where, I mean, we make it sound like this was a wonderful journey and it's like, you know, it's just been strolling along, just constantly getting better and having all these great people focused conversations. Anything along the way that didn't go so well?
Well, sure. So one of them is what we've kind of alluded to is being the military phrase. They talk about staff officers and line officers. You know, the line folks are people who are doing the business. You know, in healthcare, it'd be the doctors, the nurse, you know, the folks delivering care to patients. I've always been on the edge. No one is in the procurement business. You're procuring for a reason. And the same with facilities. As a higher ed facilities guy, you know, we only have those buildings so we can do teaching and service and research, those sorts of things. And so understanding that piece, and then even within the facilities world, as the procurement guy or as the contracts guy, I've certainly over the years at times felt like I was capped. I could only go so far doing this and whatnot. And make no bones about it. I mean, I don't know how, if somebody listening to this doesn't know me, they may be thinking, what a wonderful, humble, you know, grounded human being. No, I got a big ego, and I think I have the answer a lot. And it's very frustrating to me at times when I don't hear it and trying to find the patience for it. The other piece where I certainly have gotten frustrated over the years is sort of that difference between the incremental improvement and the disruptive big strategy. I think more often than not, I'm a tinkerer and I want to let's just try and get this a little bit better, a little bit better, a little bit better. I think sometimes when it gets too big, it's like, that's more than I can handle. Let's break this down into something I can get to. But that continuous improvement approach, that, you know, piece here, piece there, again, one piece at a time. I know I can drive people crazy. Because it's like, can we just live with what we have and keep going with that for a while? Like, yeah, but we can make that one a little better and that one a little better and that, you know. So that doesn't always help. And my habit of thinking out loud about the what ifs and whatnot. My long suffering wife has put up with this for 30 odd years. And she's kind of come to the, are you deciding or are you just talking?
Yeah, I can relate to that. Yeah. What are you talking to yourself, or are you actually sharing something? Like, no, I'm just talking out loud. That's it. This isn't a conversation. The self-assurance piece that you described, I've lived with that. John, unfortunately, has lived with that as well, where it's like, hey, you know what? I know I'm right, and I'm just going to give you some time and space to catch up to me. I know you'll get there eventually.
Yeah, and I've certainly have done that with places, you know, like I think I've been a little hip for the room more than once on basically construction procurement, where it's like, you know, you're chasing numbers and that's not the way we're going to get good value. And trying to get people to think past that has been a little bit of a challenge at times. And it is interesting as I'm old, you know, we're all continually getting older, but I'm at a point now where in a weird way, I have less patience for it. Because there's only so much longer we're all going to be doing this, and how much of that do I want to? It's like, look, I've got the answer for you here, or maybe I don't have your answer, but at least I want to point you. You need to find the answer, but quit looking over there. You know, quit looking in the tree for fish. You know, or whatever. I don't know. There's probably a better phrase than that, but you know, it's like. At one time I had a goal. I don't think I'm going to do this at this point. I was going to write a book on construction procurement, and it's just like, because,
whoa.
Yeah, I know. And I had the right title for it, which was always going to be, selling meat by the yard. I mean, the way we buy construction is so dumb. And, and that's really the point. It's like, I may not know the details on the right way to do some of this, but directionally it's like, we need to think about this differently. We need to, you know, don't worry about cost, worry about value. You know, what are you really trying to get here? And just trying to understand that. Right now the phrase I'm having with some of my team members here is we need to trust our partners more, and we need to expect more from them. It's kind of an interesting piece, but we've got both going on where we're really hammering down in the weeds on certain things, but then losing the piece of, look, that's just what you should be doing. You know, it's like, well, I showed up at all the meetings and whatnot. Well, yeah, but your design still didn't have what it needed, or your estimate was 20% off, or fill in the blank. It's like, I can't contract to say, give me, well, I can't. It's like, I can't contract by that by specifying all these details. I can say, you're going to be a professional. And so are we, and we're going to work with each other and get better. And there will be problems, but we're all committed to work together to figure out a way to solve it, including when we're not doing it right, we're going to tell each other, or when we, you know, this isn't our expectation.
Do you find it's difficult to communicate, you know, we're going to trust our partners more and expect more from them.
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, I can tell that my communication style, where I tend to speak in haikus, or, you know, everything's an allegory of some sort or another. Some people that works well. Other people, when I say, well, it's like such and such, well, then they want to discuss such and such and why that wasn't what you, you know, it's like, you know, being, it works. I need to work more on the direct communication. But I think the other piece, John, is it really is a mind shift about how do you think of this more in words like partner as opposed to vendor or contractor. You know, it's like, I need you, you know, professional. I need you to get here, and I need this from you. And it is scary. I think for folks who frankly may have been burned by contractors, and contractor, I mean designer or constructor, and who's, you know, and the solution is you create more rules, you know, to say, no, you know, you have too many. That's the real problem here. You know, I had an old boss who told me his definition of experience is what I think of as a lot of contracts, which is a collection of mistakes you remember. And if you think of it that way, that every time something goes wrong, so we're not going to let that happen again, and we'll put it in the contract. We'll put it in a contract. A friend of mine, a pretty successful attorney, he was negotiating a contract with a very large CM based in Detroit, who does a lot of industrial work, and my friend John was very proud at the end of this that he had taken care of that small tool allowance, and he had taken care of the home office overhead, and he just had a whole list of things that he had made sure they couldn't overcharge his client for. And he's still feeling slightly smug once the contract signed, and the person on the other end of the table says, you know, I got a dozen more ways to cheat you that you haven't thought of. And I think that's a really important way to think of this. If you keep thinking about this as killing cockroaches, that I'm going to eliminate this, there's always more. You're just not going to do that. If you say instead, let's all try to get to the same place, you know, but it's a huge mindset shift, and it's really tough if folks feel like they're getting burned doing it. It's a vicious cycle. Folks feel like they're burned the way they're doing it, and the natural response is, we won't let them get away with that one again. And it's like, no, that's tough. So.
I channeled you. I had an issue while back where we had a situation where a sprinkler system went off inside a pharmacy. And over the weekend, and of course, Monday morning, the first question is, what are you going to do to prevent this from ever happening again? And my response was, we need to burn the hospital down. Of course, you chuckle. The response was not nearly as warm and fuzzy as I was hoping, but being able to backpedal quickly from what happened. But it was very frank. It was, if you want that absolute certainty, this is what we're going to have to do. Now, the realistic answer is, I understand. But it's certainly a lot more complex than simply just, yeah, like you said, hit the next cockroach or let's eliminate this and add this and make this. And yeah, that's right. We got to hold someone accountable. It is a long, long process to shift. And it's not just in our industry. We know that very well. We've both run across people in other industries who are on the procurement side, trying to chase that ever elusive, how do we actually partner with people as opposed to buy goods and or services and simply say, do this, and in exchange, I will give you money. It's a lot more complicated than that. And that's a whole nother conversation, and we could talk for hours. Yes. and explore both good, bad, and everything in between and how we got here. But we're out of time today. Jack, I really appreciate you taking a few minutes today and sharing your thoughts and insights and your journey and how you view the world. It's still, to me, one of the most fascinating things. And I've got a lot here that I've jotted down as we've been talking. And so hopefully our listeners did too. Until next time, I have to say thank you for listening to Ripple Intent Podcast. Find us at rippleintent.org. Find us on LinkedIn if you want to know more. And as always, we look forward to seeing you next time on the next episode of the podcast. Take care.